Evet. Okay. Notice your thoughts while you're waiting. The mind is always producing stuff to chew on. John, you reminded me of something one of my teachers said, that talking about the ego and personality, but that we think that the ego and personality are all about getting good feelings. She suggested that it's not about good feelings. What attracts the ego and the personality is the strength behind the feeling. How did she put it? The intensity. The ego is attracted to the intensity rather than good, bad, right, wrong. If it's more, so we can probably notice that. If you're in a down place, sometimes you do more to keep in a down place. If you're in an up place, of course, we want to hold on to it more. But she was saying that rather than making it about certain feelings one way or another, the ego is much more attracted to the intensity of those feelings. Anyway, let's take a minute. And as we begin this morning, let us be grateful we are here. Let us be grateful we are here for ourselves. We are here for one another. And with one object in mind, the healing of the world. And healing does not happen when you turn up your outrage. All that happens is you get more outrage or fear or negativity. All righty. I want you to imagine as we begin this lesson this morning that you are open to growth, however that shows up for you. That whether we know it or not in our thinking mind, that there is a purpose. There is a time for every season under heaven. Khalil Gibran and the prophet once wrote, "Would that you could accept the seasons that pass over your life as you accept the seasons that as they occur in nature." Because they do. We're continually going through phases of life, death, and rebirth. It's not fun sometimes, but it happens. Life, death, rebirth. So it's not just the waking up and the falling asleep. It's a cyclic adventure of the way human beings learn, the way we grow. Life, death, rebirth. Paul is asking, I'm on page 321. Paul is asking, are we going up the mountain anymore? I love it. Are we going to have a talk about where we go? What's going on here? What's happening? And the guide suggests both things are happening at once. Now, this whole lesson today, you're going to have to get out of your head a little bit. Don't try to understand it with your thinking mind, because I don't think you can. I can't. Both things are happening at once. As we teach you, the escalation of your field progresses incrementally, step by step. As you walk up the path with us, you lift to higher fields. We do not pause in our awakening of your fields. We don't say, okay, well, that happened. Let's take a rest for a while. We're moving, we're continually moving, we're continually growing, we're continually working with you to stretch yourself. Even sometimes if you're not willing, well, the mere fact that you showed up here this morning means you were ready to get stretched. You might not have realized that consciously, but it's true. We do not pause in our awakening of your fields. In fact, as you turn each page, as you hear or experience these words, you are being attuned. Like guitar or violin, you work on those little pegs, you put it in tune. The more in tune you are, the more aligned you are with higher consciousness, the more that becomes part of your knowing being. You are being attuned, and the field that you hold is creating the patterning for what is required for you to progress through. The field that you hold. Field means energy. And the energy that I would think they're referring to here right now is opening ourselves up to the possibility that there is or can be, or that there is being created at this moment, peace, joy, comfort. That all of the things that my heart seems to desire are already here, if I could just see them. And so, in other words, I guess you could say, we're using the imagery of walking up the mountain. For me, anyway, a better imagery would be imagining yourself kind of covered with layers and layers and layers and layers of stuff, negativity. And because you are covered with so many layers of that, you think that's who you are, because you've been told that's who you are. Now, what we're doing here is we're taking each one of those blankets, each one of those energetic pieces of negativity, and pulling it off one by one until you become a little bit more free. You become a little bit closer to the light. You begin to realize a little bit more and a little bit more that I am the light. One sheet of negativity after the other. And all that's necessary there, you don't have to do any work or any physical labor, because the mere presence of you being here kind of creates an atmosphere or an energy that gives you the power to be able to get rid of one of those blankets, another one, another piece of negativity. And that's happening by the guides or the angels or whatever you want to call them, creating a field, an openness where that can happen. One of my teachers put it this way, is that, no, I don't want to get into too much physics. I'll do that later if we have time. The field that you hold is creating the patterning for what is required for you to progress through. Well, I don't want to leave you hanging, so let me share it with you. She was talking about something in physics that they call the creation of a morphogenetic field. And a morphogenetic field is essentially an energy point that provides a breakthrough that maybe has never been experienced before. One of the primary examples of that is Roger Bannister in the 4 Minute Mile. Up until that time, it was predicted nobody can break that barrier. It's too much. Well, people tried and tried and tried and tried. Finally, Roger Bannister broke that. And then what happened afterwards was people started breaking that more and more and more and more and more. It wasn't a barrier anymore because somebody broke through that reality or what they thought was reality. In spiritual teaching, Jesus the Christ was the one who broke through the morphogenetic field of death. Said, There's no such thing. Look at me. I'm here. I'm back. Not even. Not am I only back here. I am here. Greater things than this shall you do. And so what the guys are saying is the field has already been created for you to be able to absorb and take into your being. The field has already been created for you to rise above your negativity. It's already here. What we ask of you as we continue this teaching is the forgive. This is great. I love this. Is the forgiveness of the self for not knowing what comes next. So instead of saying, "Well, don't stop looking at what comes next. You'll find out when you get there." Forgive yourself for not knowing. It's okay that you don't know, because nobody else does. One of our teachers likes to point out that planet Earth is the classroom for unconditional love. It's the third stage in our evolution and our growth as a species. And everybody says, "Well, what's the fourth stage about?" Well, you can't know what the fourth stage is about until you finish the third one. It's like in recovery programs. Somebody's having a problem with step. Let's see, I'm having a real problem with step four. Well, I'll go back to step three, because that's. You didn't finish your work on the one before. That's why you can't move forward. Nothing wrong with you, nothing bad, right? You're just trying to get to a place that's not opening, like a door that's not open for you yet. You haven't gotten the key to the key to this lies in the step before. What we ask of you as we continue this teaching is the forgiveness of the self for not knowing what comes next. And this is important to understand. Because you have a desire to know what happens next, to skip to the last page of the book, if you wish. You preclude yourself from the miracle of what would be brought to you in your innocence. And your innocence means unpresupposed, unexpected. Oh, I've already done that. Really? It's another way of saying living in the present moment. I mean, a different way of understanding that, but another way of saying the same thing. Because that's where everything is happening. That's where learning happens, that when growth happens, that was where everything else happened. It's one of the things I really like about what we do on Sunday morning. It's hard not to be in the moment, for me anyway. And I'm not trying to jump out. I'm not looking at the book and say, what's next? Doesn't matter. See, we could be using this book, the Book of Mastery, or you could be using book number 13 that just came out recently, I think. And it will speak to you in a language that you need and you understand. It doesn't matter what the number is. It doesn't matter what the volume is. What matters so much is that you are open to it. And it will teach you what you need to learn, what you are open to learn. So it's not like, well, let's go to the last book and that'll have all the secrets. You can do that if you want to, but it's not going to be open to you until you get what it is you need to get to move to the next step. If you
Jerry,
wish, yes.
I just had an image that we talked about before years ago. I think it was when we were doing the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament. But the books, because of all these books that keep coming out, what I've noticed is I've gone back to some of the older books. They say the same thing in different words. And it's kind of like the spiral staircase that keeps going up. And we keep ending up in the same spot. Just a little bit higher up in each volume. Sometimes it's necessary to go back down a few rungs to go, oh yeah, that's what you said back then. It's just I understand it differently now when I'm up here.
Exactly. That's a
Just
great
a
image.
thought.
Thank you. I've used that before, but I didn't think about it in this context. It is a spiral. And one of the things that's confusing sometimes is when we are at, let's say, a point on the spiral that's similar to the one that was in the lower level, it feels the same. Emotionally, many times, it feels this. And because it feels the same, we say to ourselves, well, it must be the same. It's not. I know I've preached this piece of my own personal gospel 9 million different times, but I'll say it again. How you feel has nothing to do with your spiritual awakening or your spiritual strength. How you feel is an emotion, but it has nothing to do with measuring where you are spiritually in your life. So don't try and combine it. Well, I'm in a bad place. I'm in a lousy place. I must be missing out on something spiritually in my life. Maybe that's true, but the emotions have absolutely nothing to do with where you are spiritually. They are not the same thing. They are two different realities. So I encourage you, please don't get caught in that trap. How you feel is how you feel, and you might need to do something about that. But it has nothing to do with your spiritual state of mind.
How does that work, though, Jerry? I mean, how do you know your spiritual state of mind then? Because if you knew it was, say, let's just, I'm not knowing what other word to use, at a high level, I probably would not be feeling a low level.
May I answer that?
Sure.
So think of Jesus in the garden, sweating blood, asking God at least three times to please let this cup pass. As advanced spiritually as he was overcome by emotion. Just a thought.
Thank you, John.
And very soon after that, when he came back and found Peter, James, and John asleep again, he didn't say anything. He just said, gave him kind of a motion, we got to go now. And what's interesting in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, at that particular moment, it says, at that point, there was no more Jesus. In other words, the personality and the ego structure that might have upheld him in relating to other people was no longer necessary. I no longer identify with that. It's no longer part of my identity. Good question. And I think we might want to visit that some other time too, but I hope the message got across.
Yeah, it'd be nice to go into that deeper sometime.
Maybe I'll do that in the reflection, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Because I've been stuck with that one, not stuck with that one, but I've worked with that one for quite often. Another for instance of that. I heard this expression a number of years ago, and I would like to shoot the person whoever invented it. He said, if you feel far away from God, who moved?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
It's good, but it's not the truth. Because
no.
You never can be apart from God, no matter how you feel. God
right.
is present to you no matter how you feel at this particular moment, no matter what has gone on in your life, no matter what has transpired, no matter what you feel at this particular moment. God could not be any closer than where God is right now. That's what I'm saying. My feeling level is important and I need to deal with it, but it doesn't tell me the truth of my spiritual reality. It can't. They are two very, very different things.
Yeah, you know, it is confusing because feeling is also, to me, an indication of intuition. That's part of my intuition path is, you know, you get a feeling about a certain thing.
There's a difference, though, between what you're talking about, intuitive sense of something and an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
An intuitive sense of something is an awareness. And we use the word feeling to describe that, but it's not a feeling, it's an awareness. That's the distinction I like to make here. There's a difference between what my intuition is telling me and what my emotions might be telling me. I'm not saying one is bad and one is worse than the other, one is better than the other, but they're different. They're creating different fields of reality. Can you imagine what it would be like if I didn't go to work just because I feel like I didn't want to? I don't feel like going to work today. I don't feel like being loved today. I don't feel like I'm a child of God today. Well, let's suppose you stick on the work angle for me. I don't feel like, well, you get your ass out of bed and you go to work. You say, those are my feelings and they're okay. I probably need to deal with them, but they are not a definition or a description of who I am or where I am in my life. And so they don't interfere either with my spiritual reality. The deepest spiritual reality that people go through, one of the deepest, is called the dark night of the soul. And in the dark night of the soul, you feel as if you are completely cut off from the presence of God. You feel that way. And yet there is an inner reality that tells you that is not my truth. Mother Teresa went through the last 7 years of her life, went through incredible darkness, incredible depression, feeling that God was not present in my life at all. And yet I'm going to put one foot in front of the other. I'm going to heal another leper, no matter how I feel, because that's not my reality. I can remember going through a very, really dark period of depression in my life for about 4 or 5 years. I didn't think it was ever going to end, but it did. But I remember telling Margot, I said, I know why people take their lives. I said, I'm not going to, but I can't describe it to you. I know there is something more to me than the depression that I'm walking through. I can't tell you what that is. I can't tell you how that feels. It's not an emotion, it's an awareness. It's an awareness that there is some energy form inside of me that is bigger or greater, or allowing me to put one foot in front of the other, even though I don't feel like it.
How did Margot deal with that?
She accepted the way I told her. She said, yeah, I understand. And gave me a hug. Your innocence means unpresupposed, unexpected. Sangha, you were going to say something. Margaret, could you hand her the mic?
If you're a part of God, and I know we're supposed to say, I move.
No, not supposed to.
Really?
No,
Oh.
nobody moved.
Okay.
It's an illusion. It's a lie in the first place. It doesn't. It's a complete untruth. First of all, God doesn't move. And you know, you can pretend that you're not in God's love, but that doesn't mean it's cut off. So I didn't mean that to be a truth, or that was kind of a denial of truth. Okay. Yeah. Matt?
For those who have children as a parent, there are times in the growth of that child where that child is going through a very painful episode. And you as a parent know that that child, there's no one that can do it but that child. You can only be there for that child. And as a parent, you know, that's the closest you come to that child. Heart bleeds, but you know that that child has healing. I think that's in many ways how God, because in my own life, you know, I have had crisis. I think that God is the closest, especially looking back.
Yeah. The way psychiatrist Sheldon Kopp put it, and he was working on a description of love. And he said, this is going to be tough to hear, but I'll say it a lot anyway. Love sometimes means living with the helpless knowing that I can do nothing of another person's pain, except be there. living with the helpless knowing. You know, that's why we hate to go to hospitals, funeral homes, because they're helpless places. Living with the helpless knowing that I can do nothing about the other person's pain except be there. And that's a big one. Your presence, the people we remember in our lives, the teachers we remember in our lives. We don't remember what they taught us necessarily. What I remember is how they allowed me to be present to them and how they were present to me. I couldn't describe what that means or how that means in my life, but I knew it was there. Just like I knew something was inside of me that was greater than the depression I was going through. But and Matt kind of turned it up a notch. Imagine what that's like in your relationship with a child. The child who is never, interesting, the child who has never seen a star before awakens to the beauty of that star through his experience. You probably don't know what that feels like, but let's say if you're out in the country sometime and right after sunset, you start seeing stars that are completely invisible when you're living in the city. It's like a whole different world looking up at the stars. The one who decides, okay, let me take the first sentence again. The child who has never seen a star before awakens to the beauty of that star through his experience. Now, when the mind kicks in, the one who decides what a star should be may look at the very same star and say, well, I thought it would be brighter. I thought it would be more lovely. I must have assumed wrong. Ram Dass gave the analogy of imagining that you're walking into a forest. It's just beautiful. It's gorgeous. Leaves are turning. The warm day is just you're overcome by the beauty of nature. And you're standing in a stand of maple trees. And of course, over on your right are some pine trees or some oaks. And you say out loud or into yourself, and well, these maple trees, they should be oak trees. Nobody says that. Nobody even thinks that. But here's me, right, looking at a star and saying, oh, that's nice. What's next? That's what my mind does. The one who decides what a star should look like, what I should look like, what you should look like, should maybe look at the very same star and say, I thought it would be brighter. I thought it would be more lovely. I thought I must have assumed wrong. Remember the little prince on the planet that he was born on? Okay. His rose was tremendously special to him. Everything, actually everything on the planet was. When he visited planet Earth, he said, well, you know, he couldn't understand how people could take so many things for granted. The beauty of nature, the beauty of a rose bush, even the beauty of a little volcano on his planet. The beauty of sitting here together in this space. Oh, that's just Sunday school class. Oh, that's just somebody saying they love me. Really? I must have assumed wrong. You didn't assume wrong at all. What you did was you let your mind, your thinking mind, define your reality. And your thinking mind is hardly ever becomes attached to something that is beautiful, because there's always going to be something next. What's the next one? Okay, so we did step three. Are you finished with it? Well, I'm not finished. If you're not finished with it yet, you're not going to get the open book for the next one. It just didn't work that way. Spiritual awakening happens all the time, but you don't awake to something that you're not ready for and ready to deal with. Claiming your innocence will be the next stage of initiation, and it will be brought to you in love. We will stop this chapter for now. We'd like to continue very soon, because the teaching you are being brought is actually in some ways camouflage for the reawakening of the true innocence that you hold in your true state. And we get this. We so wish to unveil you in your beauty. We so wish to see you in your love. And we are so impatient for the majesty to unfold. In other words, get with it, man. It's here. What's holding you back? We love you as you are. We wish you well. We will speak to you soon. Good night. Stop now, please. What would it be like in this moment to realize that you are unconditionally loved? That God, not a separate entity, but the God, the divine within you, cannot love you any more than you are being loved in this moment. Now, the next moment, you can be loved a little bit more if you stretch part of the process. But in this moment right now, the exquisite of this divine nature, being here for you, being here with you. Day 22. We are asking you questions today about responsibility to the self, as you have known the self, the small self, the self you identify with most of the time, your ego and your personality consciousness. As you have known the self is the important thing to comprehend, as you have known the self. In other words, you probably know yourself differently than the way you did before. You know you're not your personality or your ego consciousness, but you are more than that. But there was a time before this when you didn't realize that. You thought all of the labels were who you are. You have known yourself through your history, through the decisions made at various times in your life. And now you stand at this new juncture, halfway up the mountain to your own liberation. I was just thinking of Yogi Berra. You see, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. I saw an article in a magazine years ago. There was a magazine, a Buddhist magazine publication called Tricycle. And one of the articles in there was the koans of Yogi Berra. It's just absolutely fascinating. They took all of these crazy statements that he made, right, and turned them into Zen koan. It was just absolutely beautiful. You say, I want to go higher, call me higher. And then you look back down and say, call me back. It's strange up here. I don't know whether I'm ready for this. I must not know myself as I have been. I cannot comprehend this time, these choices that are being asked of me. Who am I now without my history? Who are you? Who are you right? Who are you right now in this moment without your history? Great question. Who are you without your history? Doesn't mean you have to throw it away. Just means that you're not letting it define you. Family is a good example of that. Again, a little Ram Dass statement of, if you want to know whether you're enlightened or not, spend a weekend with your family. And he wasn't saying that as a judgment, he was just saying that's true, because the people you grew up with, parents and siblings, the people you grew up with helped to form your ego and your personality self. In other words, help to form your definition of who you think you are. And even though you've worked a long time getting past that or getting through that, it's still there. I mean, I went through years of recovery. I went to codependency classes. I went to a whole entire week-long workshop on healing your inner child. You know, all of the stuff we're supposed to do in the 70s and 80s, did all of that. I would come home, and somehow or another, in a state of, I wouldn't say bliss, but a state of calm, in control, I would go home, and within 5 minutes, my father had pushed all of my buttons, and I'd be ready to walk up a wall. And I would say, well, how the hell did that happen? I did this and I did this and I did this, and it's still there. Probably because I still look at myself as being a little child and him being in charge, which he's not anymore. So is my definition of him as well as my definition of me. Sangi.
Go back to the phrase you always say, be open to the possibility.
What was that again?
I just go back to the phrase you always say, be open to the possibility. Because you can't will yourself out of those masks.
Yeah.
All you can do is be open. I don't know if that's the same as will or surrender.
No, I'll trust that for you. Who am I without my history? See, and then all of a sudden I find myself around people who keep reminding me of my history. And then I start identifying with it more. Who are you without your history is so simple and so profound. Who you are without your history is the divine self who replicates her life and fashion in the true awareness of who she has always been. Say that again. Who you are without your history is the divine self who replicates her life in fashion in the true awareness of who she has always been. You didn't create this reality of being close to God or having a divine mind and consciousness inside of you. It's been there all along. Here we go again. The treatise you are being gifted with, the truth you are being gifted with, is once again about the incarnating of the true self at the capacity that can be aligned to by each individual, and the creation of the past they are seeking to release now are the only things that are too heavy to be lifted. In other words, the true self emerges when we are living in the present moment. Your history tells you who you thought you were. And again, we're not denying that or throwing that away. We're just saying, that's not the truth of who I am. Nobody defines that. My thinking mind can't define that. I can say, well, I'm a divine child of God. I've said that a million times, but if you don't believe it, it's not gonna work. It's not gonna mean anything. It's not gonna mean much. It means something probably. The truth of I am a divine child of God, unconditionally loved, is the essence of my being. And the only way I can know that is through experience, not by thought, not by intellect, not by emotions, but by experience. And we all have experienced the essence of who we are, maybe just for a split second occasionally. You're saying, oh, and you try to grab it, so it's sort of like smoke. But that's sort of the divine self saying, I am giving you a hint of what it's really like to be aligned with your divine consciousness. You're going to have to work to make that hint a little bit greater, but it's always here. So again, we're getting away from trying to define this in terms of the thinking mind. It goes to the thinking mind. It's too big for the thinking mind. Doesn't make sense to the thinking mind. The treatise you're being gifted with is once again about the incarnating of the true self. In other words, being a unique understanding that you and I and everybody in this world are a unique expression of divine consciousness. I think the imagery that I've shared with you before is imagining that as you go through these lessons, this learning, then you become less and less attached to defining yourself in terms of your personality and your ego. But it doesn't disappear. What happens eventually, and this is a little bit of a stretch metaphor a bit, but it fits for me. What happens after a while of spiritual awakening and spiritual awareness is that your personality and your ego consciousness become the lens through which the divine light shines through. And the way the divine light shines through is different for everybody and everything. So you don't throw away your personality or ego structure, but instead of it being a definition of who you are, it becomes now the lens through which the divine light shines through in its own unique way. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could see ourselves that way? See other people that way? Oh, your divine expression. Expression of divine consciousness. As you require yourself to continue on the upward path, your burden is lifted. But we cannot lift what you will not release. I mean, we've heard that in other spiritual circles before. I've heard it in other circles before. God cannot heal what you are not willing to let go of. I can make the ground a little bit more easy, a little bit more acceptable. But you're the one who's going to have to surrender into divine consciousness. God cannot heal what we are not willing to let go of. So if you're not willing to let go of your guilt or your fear or your anguish or your outrage, I can't heal that for you. Like we were talking before, God says, I can be present with you as you struggle, as you wrestle with those things, but that's your stuff. And the step you take of letting go or releasing that or surrendering that, even though you don't know where that's going to take you, that's my job. Once you surrender, I take over. But you got to let it go first. Don't take away my name. Means don't take away the identity that I have counted on all of this lifetime. What'll I do without it? Don't take away my possessions. The story in the Gospels about usually labeled the rich young man. About a man who stepped out of the crowd, Jesus was teaching, and said, Lord, what must I do to be better spiritually, to grow spiritually? And he said, obey the commandments. He said, I already do that. He said, be charitable to all those you meet. I already do that. Went through a whole list of things. I already do that. If thou wilt be perfect, in other words, and this is just to him, if thou wilt be perfect, go sell what you have and give it to the poor and come follow me. In other words, you got to let go of all of your stuff before you can become one of my followers. If you want to be really, really alive spiritually, you know, let go of all the shit you might be holding on to. Because unless you let go of it, you can't follow me. And one of the saddest little verses in Christian scripture was that the young man turned around and walked away sadly because he had many possessions. Or we could just use the word attachment if you want to. Walked away sadly. Because he had many, many possessions. That always touched my heart. I said, and here I am still holding on to stuff. That's so sad. Okay. You can put your stuff down. Take a couple of breaths. Close your eyes, be like. And remember the image that we used a while ago of the altar. And the altar is not a physical object so much, but a bridge between the human and the divine. And when something, an incident or another person or feeling or something comes to mind and is placed on the altar. In other words, we surrender it to the divine God, surrender it to the altar, and the divine consciousness takes over. So let's take a moment for the for what it said. Forgive yourself for not knowing what's next. Why don't we take that one? Forgive yourself for not knowing what's next. And you get a sense of that struggle. And if you're willing to place that on the altar. And allow it to be transformed. So my energy of wanting to know what's next gets transformed into living in the present moment. After a lesson like this, I take my doubts and my inability to explain this with my intellect. I take that stuff and I put it on the altar. Lord, that I may see. I am whole. I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall flow from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. You open your eyes. And... Thank you all for being here. Wouldn't be
Thank
the same.
Thank you, Gary,
again.
So much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank
Love
you, Gary.
Have a great week.
Thank you, Jerry.
You too.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Jerry?
Yeah.
Did you get my email this
Pardon
week?
Me?
Did you get my email this week?
Yes, I did, and I haven't responded to it yet, but I will.
Okay. I was just wondering.
No, you didn't get lost, right? I was just a little bit busier than I thought I would. I will get to that this afternoon. Okay?
I understand. Okay. Thank you.
No, I appreciate your asking.
Thanks, Sherry.
You're welcome. Thank you.